An update from the State House, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And how are you feeling tonight? Because I'm still sort of reeling from what we went through on Tuesday.
I'm still reeling a little bit because I'm also desperately working to be prepared for the next time we have to engage in the battle that we engaged in on Tuesday. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've been with us a while, you're kind of picking up on it, and you probably know what we went through this last Tuesday, because we at the Institute for Principled Policy take a particular position when it comes to the idea of the state that we love, Ohio, going into mindless insanity and going on record as calling the Congress to convene a new constitutional convention. But we are facing that dragon yet again, ladies and gentlemen, because this spring, Ron Magg, who is a state representative from the Warren County area down around Lebanon in southwest Ohio, introduced House Joint Resolution number 3, which would call for an Article 5 Constitutional Convention for the purpose of putting into the Constitution what is being called the National Debt Relief Amendment, which is the brainchild of a organization that is receiving its funding from a couple of wealthy multimillionaires from Texas, no, not George Bush, who's being fronted by a former state legislator from North Dakota by the name of Curtis Olofsson. So Representative Magg, who also happens to be the chairman of the committee in which his resolutions being heard, fancy that, marked the bill up this week for a hearing, a third hearing. It's already had two, and we've been there for the hearings to listen in, find out what's going on, find out why they're thinking this is a good idea at all. And so on Tuesday, the third hearing, which was a testimony for anybody who supported or opposed the bill, but the bill was marked for a potential vote in committee. Well, we get to committee, and Charles and I both went, along with some friends, some folks you've heard on this program before, Robert Owens, an attorney from Delaware, Ohio, and also pretty sharp on his feet in relation to the original intent and true meaning of the Constitution in Article 5, and a number of other folks who testified, asking our Ohio state legislators not to go down this dark road in putting Ohio on record as one of the states calling for Congress to convene a new constitutional convention. And we'll get into some of the minutia of that here in a little bit. We've done a lot of it on previous programs. So if you go to our website at principledpolicy.com, you can go through our archives and look up a number of them. I think, Chuck, we even have them categorized maybe by the ConCon issue. So,
in fact, we played an archive program Wednesday from one that we did in March on this issue when we were first informed that we were probably going to have to testify on this issue. Since we were both exhausted on Tuesday night and could record a program, we went ahead and played an archive from, I think, March 29th on this issue. We're trying to be as informative as we can, because we want you to contact your state representative and tell them you oppose any new attempts to call a new constitutional convention. We've done our best to explain why it's a problem. And sometimes this is a very difficult thing, because people who tout themselves as experts are coming out and saying it's perfectly safe, don't worry, nothing bad can happen. And when you look into their quote-unquote expertise, they're, shall we say, twisting facts. In fact, twisting them to the point where they're completely so bent out of shape that they can't recover. They're not being truthful in most cases.
Yeah, that's right. They're not. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we went into this committee hearing knowing that it had been announced that they were probably going to vote this out. And I've been around the legislature for a long time, Chuck. And when you've got a piece that the primary sponsor happens to be the chairman of the committee that it's being heard in, the likelihood is, if he's marked it for a vote, he's got the votes in hand to move it out of committee. Well, we started doing a little head count, and some of our folks have been contacting, and we thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your calls that you've been making. And we found out that at least three that we could count. Now, the way this committee is broken down, just real quickly, the minutia, there are 23 members of the committee. There are 14 Republicans and 9 Democrats. None of the Democrats, to our knowledge, are going to support this resolution, okay? Not a single one of them, because they see it as an attack upon the Obama administration. And that's fine. Let them see it that way. They may not agree with us on the real reasons why this is a bad idea, but if they think it's a bad idea, we're okay with that. And what's the old saying? The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
That's right.
We'll live with that. But of that 23 people, in order to pass a piece of legislation, you have to have a majority of the committee, which is, in this case, would be 12, because you need like half plus one, so you need 12 votes. Well, there are 14 Republican members. The chairman of the committee is Republican. A number of the co-sponsors on the resolution sit on the committee. We're thinking this thing's probably going to get voted today, and we may or not be able to stop, but we're going to put up a valiant effort, though, to try. Well, Chuck, we got our first surprise in committee when we started counting noses on the Republican side and realized that 3 of the 14 we had commitments from that they said they would not support the resolution. That leaves the chairman with only 11 votes, and that was confirmed indirectly for us when we got the final printed copy of the committee agenda for the day. And there was an interesting black mark through the words potential vote underneath this resolution's information, meaning that the chair had backed off from voting on it because, well, obviously, Charles, he didn't have the votes.
Yes, that's the bottom line. So our work has paid off, at least to that extent. Now, that doesn't mean we need to tell folks that doesn't mean our work is over and that we can relax. In fact, it means that effort is going to be redoubled on the part of the chairman because it's embarrassing to have a bill that you can't even ram through your own committee. And honestly, I kind of feel for him. Now, they should know, I talked about this with Mike O'Reilly the other day in our interview, that Ron Magg is really kind of a good guy. Normally, we can work together with him on a number of issues, and he has been very friendly to many of our causes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just because we disagree on this issue doesn't mean that he somehow become the enemy. And probably I shouldn't have said that the way I said it. I apologize.
No. I'm not chastising you. And in fact, I think we need to be straightforward on this. In this case, he is deluded. He has been given the impression by people who tout themselves as experts that they can do something that they cannot do. And that is call a constitutional convention and control it from the state house. I can tell you that my testimony, now we need to tell people that we sat there for 3.5 hours. You actually didn't get to testify. I mean, you were called, but you deferred because it became obvious there was going to be another hearing. I was called, unfortunately, late in the day and was not allowed to give my full testimony. So I am going to actually request and I'm going to prepare new and different testimony and request that I be allowed, since other people have been allowed to testify at least twice, I'm going to be asked to be allowed to testify as well. So that's the way these go.
Well, that shouldn't be too big of a problem because the key supporter of the bill, the former senator from North Dakota, Curtis Olofsson, testified during the second hearing, but yet testified again at the third hearing, Charles, if you remember correctly, on Tuesday,
yes,
along with a number of others who obviously didn't even understand the issue, but they testified in support of it anyway. But what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen, is we think that if the chairman really is trying to get this resolution out, they're going to try to find enough support on the committee by either trying to convince a Democrat or two to come across and give them a vote, or through whatever means necessary, get those 3 Republican no's to come across as a yes, so that the chairman can save face and move this resolution, which I, from talking, you know, Chuck, that's one of the things I like doing, is chatting with members before a committee starts. And you learn a lot of things. And one of the things that I learned on Tuesday was they're pushing this because the Speaker of the House, William Batchelder, this is an issue he's passionate about.
About the Constitution.
About a constitutional convention. He's passionate about, because he believes in his mind that it can be totally controlled, limited to one subject. The state legislatures will have a chokehold leash on the delegate, and that even if they don't, if all of that is false, you can stop it by enough states not ratifying, which we've talked about on this program before, and you mentioned to the committee.
In my limited testimony, is
a daydream because that's not how the first one went.
And I managed to get that part in my limited testimony. I got 2 of the most important points out, and that is in the first convention, they called it for a limited purpose. Now, I didn't get the details, but there were only 2 amendments that were supposed to be made to the Articles of Confederation. They wanted to add an interstate commerce clause to end bickering between the states regarding tariffs between states, and they wanted to add a tariff clause so that Congress would have some money to operate and pay their national debt. Because at that point, Congress had no way of raising money beyond the states paying an assessment, and the states weren't paying their assessment. So Congress wanted an independent revenue source, and the 2 things that were supposed to be called And the first thing, Barry, that they did at the Constitutional Convention of 1787 was vote to operate in absolute secret. And the second thing that they did was vote to chuck the Articles of Confederation entirely. Completely violated
That's
their
right.
charter.
That's exactly Although, what
as
they
I,
did.
As I pointed out to the committee, they violated their charter, but they did not violate their authority. There is a difference. And since I wasn't allowed to testify any further, I wasn't allowed to elaborate. But the fact is, and I won't elaborate here due to time constraints, but the fact is you can read some of that in our position paper, and we're going to be writing another paper expanding on that position, because I think eventually this is going to turn into a book if I ever get time to sit down.
I believe it is. It'll be published by Principled Policy Press, which we're just getting ready to launch this summer.
Well, it won't be ready by this summer.
I'm aware of that.
But the fact is, we were able to make those points, and a couple of the representatives, at least on the Republican side, I think grasped what we were saying. Yes, you're right. That can't be controlled. A legislature cannot control a convention, because a convention is a higher lawmaking body than a legislature. And I saw one representative whose eyes got about the size of saucers, and when I explained why, they write the laws that you have to obey by oath. The convention writes the law that you have to obey. They were like, oh my gosh, I never thought of it that way. So I said, all this idea that you can control it by law, by strongly written resolutions, no, you can't. They are independent. Their fiduciary responsibility is to we the people, not to you the legislators. And I made that point as well. So I really got the three major points out. I just had to do it in a very compressed fashion, and the chairman did not like it.
No, by the time you were getting through with your testimony, the chairman was giving you the hurry up sign and the, you know, we're going to cut you off sign. And he sounded rather, well, shall we say, miffed at you. And then he got really upset when Mr. Owens and both Mr. Owens and myself actually played out our strategy that we had talked about, which was they've taken us down from a vote. Therefore, they're going to have another committee hearing in order to be able to bring it back up for a vote. Therefore, we're going to hold and come back when the air is clear. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we had a grand total of 14 people testifying on both sides of this issue on Tuesday. It took 3.5 hours just for this one piece of legislation, and there were 5 bills still on the committee roster to be heard that day, and it took 3.5 hours just for this one resolution, which they believe is really a no-brainer and everybody should support, and so therefore everything should be good. Then why does it take a third hearing and 3.5 hours where it's mainly opponents to the bill, to the resolution coming forward?
And that seems to be what the problem with the chairman had was. He didn't like the fact that so many people showed up to testify against. I don't think they anticipated that was going to be happening. I think it was interesting that the college Republicans showed up, and bless their hearts, they're great young kids who have no understanding of the issue whatsoever.
First of all, everybody always confuses it. It wasn't the college Republicans. It was the Ohio Federation of Young Republicans, which are the ones who are maybe still in college or just out of it, that go up to all the way up to the age of, I believe, 35 or 40.
Well, I can tell you that I talked to my young friend that I saw there that I knew from my old church.
Sure.
And she told me she was with the college Republican.
Oh, okay. So basically they had both groups in there, because one person introduced himself in his testimony as the executive director of the Federation of Young Republicans.
Yeah, my mom and dad were members of the Younger Republican Club when I was a kid, so I know about that group when I was real little. When I wore my Goldwater badge in 1964 when I was 7, wore it to school, I asked her, and she said she was with the college Republicans at Case Western Reserve. So, Mariah, I doubt if you're listening, but hello if you are. Maybe I'll send you a link to this. But bless their hearts, they really didn't understand the issue. They were concerned about the deficit ceiling, which this proposed convention for an amendment was designed to build this particular amendment. And unfortunately, you discovered flaws. And unfortunately, Barry, we're out of time, as we always are when this gets interesting.
we'll uncover those flaws in the language of the amendment when I give my testimony on Tuesday, if we're going to have this hearing this coming Tuesday, on this resolution to show the members why they're not even voting to just debate the issue they think they're voting on.
Well, that's right. And we've discovered holes big enough to drive a truck through in that thing, even if they get what they want. they're not going to get what they want. That being said, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.